Welcome to the IRIS podcast. You're listening to a talk as part of the Scottish Conference on Inclusive Learning Disability Research, organised by the Scottish Consortium for Learning Disability, the Open University and IRIS. This talk was recorded on the 7th of June 2011. Steve Robertson, Sandy Galbraith, Chloe True, Marion Thompson and Dr. Lisa Curtis, Director of SCLD. The same issue, evaluation.
Well, good morning. My name is Lisa Curtis, and I'm pleased to introduce to you the rest of the same issue evaluation research team, Marion Thompson, Steve Robertson from People First Scotland, Sandy Galbraith, and Chloe True. And we're each going to tell you about an aspect of our work together. We are carrying out this work on behalf of the Scottish Government, as you've heard, and we report to a steering group, which includes the NHS, local authorities and the inspection bodies. It also includes a member of People First Scotland, wearing two hats today, and a family carer representative. SCLD has managed the research and supported the research team. Our research has a direct relationship to policy because, as you've heard from Alison, it's part of the evaluation of the same as you, the review of services for people with learning disabilities that came out now some 10 years or more ago. The evaluation also includes a review of published evidence, surveys of professionals, and a public consultation. But what we are talking about this morning is the research interviews. There are three things that we wanted to know from the evaluation. The first is what has got better in the last 10 years and what hasn't. The second, what we've learned from trying to put the same as you into practice. And the third, what are the new issues for the future that we need to be doing something about now and in the next 10 years? Like the same as you itself, our starting point was people's lives. And so our interview asked people with learning disabilities and autism spectrum disorders about their lives and what they felt about them, as well as what they thought was important for the future. So had you been part of the study, you would have been asked about your life now and what you do during the day and in a typical week, including the evenings and the weekends, your home, the area where you live, your friends and the support you get. And then your life up to now, school, college, work or trying to get work, and where else you've lived. Your health, and whether you feel you have enough choice and control. And finally, your thoughts and views, including how you found the experience of the interview. We also spoke to family carers. If you were a carer, we asked you about the person you care for, the support you receive as a carer, if any, including information, your hopes and fears, and your views about whether things have improved and what needs to happen now. Our aim was to speak to 100 people, 50 people with learning disabilities and autism spectrum disorders, and 50 family carers. We wanted to make sure that we heard about a range of different experiences. So the interviews took place in four different parts of Scotland, one rural, one urban, one where many people lived on low incomes, and one that was more mixed. We asked local authorities to identify people in a range of circumstances and then send out letters on our behalf. If people wanted to take part, they got in touch with us, and sometimes the local authorities helped us to set up the interviews. We did the interviews between January and April this year, and as you see, we managed to speak to 97 people in all. The 46 people with disabilities included people of different ages and people in different situations, such as the family home, supported living, or larger group homes. The 51 family carers included people who were working, men as well as women, some carers who were looking after a person with complex needs or profound and multiple disabilities, some carers of children and young people, and some carers from black and minority ethnic communities. So now Marion will speak to you about how we prepared ourselves as a research team to work as inclusively as possible.
In order to find out about the lives of people with a learning disability today, a team was drawn together which included two researchers from the Scottish Consortium for Learning Disability, two individuals who have a learning disability, and myself, who had a background working on the government policy. Given that the Same As You policy involved people with a learning disability in its development, it was just as important that people with a learning disability should also be involved in helping to find out about the effect the policy has had. Steve and Sandy were already experienced in talking to other people about their lives and the issues they faced. As a team, and with the input of the Evaluation Steering Group, we agreed the areas that we wanted to know about, and we worked together to firm up the interview questions. We debated the phrasing of the questions to make sure that we used language that was appropriate for those that we would be speaking to. Once the questionnaire was completed, we spent some time talking about good practice and how we would approach people. And we built our interview skills through the use of drama. We discussed as a team some of the difficult issues that we would come across. For example, if someone disclosed abuse, strong emotions, or issues of personal safety. And we decided how these issues would be handled by us. We agreed the roles that we would take in the interviews, with one person asking the questions and the other taking notes and being responsible for the recording of the conversation. And we talked about how we could support each other when we were working together. Easy read introductory letters were sent out explaining what we were doing and inviting people to speak to us. We used an easy read form with pictures to get an agreement from people about speaking to us and explain that they were free to stop at any point to have a break or to invite us to come back at another date. We asked if it was okay if we came back to talk to them or to clarify any further information. We followed introductory scripts to give consistency and to help those being interviewed to understand the purpose of our visit and to help us to remember to pass on all the necessary information. We tried to make it as easy as possible for people. We wanted people to be able to tell their stories, even those who had difficulties communicating with others, so we tried not to be too rigid with the questions. Completing a post-interview form gave an opportunity to talk about any concerns or any issues that had arisen from the interview, and to make decisions about any appropriate follow-up. It was interesting to note that both Steve and Sandy offered insights at this stage that did not immediately occur to the other researchers, so it was good to have their perspectives. We've all been involved in some of the analysis of the data that we have gathered, and each person has contributed, highlighting the issues that have emerged for us. It proved to be a valuable experience and well worth the time invested in the preparation and in the training.
Good morning. My name is Steve Robertson, and I am chairperson of People First Scotland. I have been a member of the Same As You Evaluation Working Group right from the start, and have been a member of the team doing the fieldwork visits. To begin planning the fieldwork, I met with Chloe and Lisa, and we discussed the areas that we would look at in the fieldwork and started to pull some questions together. We agreed that Chloe and Lisa would put together some draft questions based on our discussions, and we would then all agree them. We made some changes to the questions and decided to take some of them off the list. We agreed that if I didn't feel comfortable asking a question, we would change it so it flowed better. In the actual interviews, I took a lead role in asking the questions. I wanted to do this as I know that being asked the questions by someone else with a learning difficulty can really help to put people at ease. It can help them to open up and to give a more honest response, because they know that we have been through similar experiences. They know we are not likely to judge them. It was a team effort, and if I needed a breather, I asked another member of the team to ask a couple of the questions. It was good to meet the people and to hear about their lives and the issues that were affecting them. I felt valued as part of the team and enjoyed doing what felt like a valued job. Some of the stories I heard were also quite inspiring. For example, one of my colleagues met with someone who told him that he'd been allowed to work on the tills in his work. And this story really made my day. Also enjoyed it when all the team members were staying in the same place. Some of the visits went more smoothly than others, however. In two of the areas, the lead person in that area arranged all the meetings well in advance, and there was a clear plan of interviews. In the other two, however, it was more chaotic. It is very important for me to prepare myself well for each visit and to get in the right frame of mind for it. If I know the dates well enough in advance, I can get myself ready and take the time to prepare properly. I want to be professional. I want to be prepared. I want to know what I'm doing. It is difficult to do this if only I know about an interview a couple of days in advance. If I don't have enough time, I begin to feel flustered and stressed. This happens on some of the visits. It meant I didn't do any of the interviews in one of the areas, as I was only told a short time in advance. This was a shame for me, as I was looking forward to doing the work, and I felt I had a lot to offer. So I think the lessons from this are for everyone to make sure that the practical arrangements are made and firmed up in plenty of time. If this doesn't happen, it can be very difficult for us to take part. After all the visits, Chloe and Lisa wrote everything up and ran it by the other team members to make sure it was accurate. Chloe and Lisa then took the lead in writing the report of the visits, and they had a chance to comment on it together with the other team members. I think I went through about every emotion during this project. Happy, sad, angry, frustrated, inspired. But the positive thing for me is that I learnt so much from it all. I learnt not to make so many assumptions about how things would be and to be more open-minded and flexible. I just hope that others can learn from my experiences too. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Sandy. Thanks very much, Steve. Now that we have talked a bit about the evaluation, a bit about the process of getting ready to do research, and a bit about the challenges we came across, Chloe and I would like to tell you a bit about what we found out. We asked people about lots of different areas in their lives, and we still have not finished analysing all the results. However, there's one area that we have looked at together, is employment. We were surprised to find out that quite a lot of people we met were working in paid jobs or in voluntary roles or in work placements. It was quite common for people to have a paid job as well as a voluntary job work. Some of the people were working as football stewards, cleaners, office workers, cooks, cafe workers, and leisure centre staff. People volunteering in charity shops, in care homes and animal sanctuaries. Sometimes it seems to be a bit unfair that two people were doing the same kind of job, but one was fair where the other did not did the job as a volunteer. Some of the people were working to do, wanted to do more hours in their jobs. Others told us they wanted to develop their roles more or even try a different job in the future. Some people just wanted a chance to get paid work. Complicated benefit regulations made it hard for some people with learning disabilities to work as much as they want to. People with learning disabilities are really giving a lot to economy and society. The people who spoke to us and told us about lots of different kinds of skills which they brought to the workplace. It was clear that people really took pride in their jobs and the responsibilities they had. One person told us, "I tidy the shop, I take the bags of donations, I put things in the bags, I go to the bank to take the money, and I help in the shop." Now I'll hand over to Chloe to talk about the way people get their jobs and the things that made employment work well. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandy. I'd like to talk a bit about how people get their job in the first place and also about what makes employment really successful for people. The main routes to employment were a little bit different to what we expected. They were through friends and family, through social workers, through specialist employability services and support providers. But nobody that we spoke to said that they'd got a job through a mainstream employability provider. Many of the people who wanted to get into work were undertaking a work placement as a way to get into paid work. And although the people who had done these said that they really enjoyed them, one of the things that seemed to happen was that they never led to the main goal of paid work. Either they stopped without any further input, or they just carried on indefinitely. So that was a bit disappointing to hear. Another of the things that we were interested in was what made employment successful for people, and in contrast, what really stopped people from being able to work. So to start with, what made jobs and employment successful? One of the things was matching the job and the person as a way of maximising the chance of successful employment. And we had a few examples of where, for example, a supported employment agency had looked at somebody and looked at their skills together with them to consider the kind of workplace that would really suit them. It perhaps won't come as a great surprise that where employers were really flexible and they were able to make adjustments, people really flourished in their jobs. And they told us about different types of adjustments. So, for example, by tailoring a job description to a person, an employer might be able both to increase employment opportunities for people with learning disabilities, but also make them really work for the people who get the chance to take them up. Furthermore, an employer that fulfills its responsibilities to make reasonable adjustments can actually enable people who perhaps may historically have been more excluded, for example, people with multiple disabilities, to make a social and economic contribution. So we met one person who had a learning disability and also a hearing and a visual impairment, and she worked two mornings a week. And the organisation that she worked for had actually taught everybody else to sign. So that meant that she could do her job to the best of her ability, and also she was really a part of the kind of social fabric of that workplace. Another thing that makes employment really successful for people is in-work support, for example, a job coach. And that can really help a person to learn their job and to overcome any challenges. For example, we met a partially sighted man with learning disabilities. He worked in a voluntary role, and he told us that his support worker was basically his eyes, is how he put it, and that with that support in place, he could fulfil all of the roles that the organisation he was volunteering for asked of him. And finally, friendly and supportive colleagues were really valued by people, and they really made all the difference as to whether a person enjoyed their job, which I think is something that we know from the Say Evaluation team as well. To look at the other side of the coin, perhaps where things weren't working quite so well, failing to adjust to people's specific strengths and needs can really set someone up to fail. It explains why some work placements break down, and also why some people have to leave their job. One person told us, "I went to an interview at a supermarket. I said, I can manage most things, but my hands are not that steady, and I can't work with glass bottles. When I got there, that was the first thing they gave me to do, but I couldn't do it." Finally, the last barrier I'd like to talk to you is getting to work, and that can really be quite a significant barrier. Learning to travel independently, having the confidence to do that, and even having access to appropriate transport for some of the people in more rural areas, that was obviously perhaps more of an issue. That can really be decisive as to whether someone's able to work. So hopefully we've been able to give you a wee taster of what it was like to work as an inclusive research team, and also some of the things that people with learning disabilities told us about life in Scotland today. We're really looking forward to undertaking the rest of the analysis, and a final report should be available in September. And I'd just like to finish by echoing Steve's thoughts. I learned so much from this project, both personally and professionally. I learned not to make so many assumptions about people, and I hope that other people doing inclusive research can learn from our experience. Thank you.
This recording is copyright of IRIS 2011. It may be reused in the terms of Creative Commons licenses, attribution, non-commercial, share-alike 2.5, UK Scotland license. Go to www.iris.org.uk for more information.